There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Good morning, folks. Big lineup today. We're going to visit with Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL News New Orleans. WWL New Orleans political analyst. We'll talk about the indictment of Randy Farrell on federal charges that directly implicate Mayor Cantrell in a criminal conspiracy. And we'll talk about what the downstream implications of that is. In the 12 o'clock hour, we'll start out with Walt Leger, president and CEO of New Orleans & Company. We'll talk about the TSA and their new biometric technology and the White House Task Force on Global Sporting Events, visa wait times, and seamless and secure travel, all things being challenged on so many different fronts. Plus, we'll talk about October events. If you're looking for something to do in this city, you do not have to look far, and that's a good thing. At 11 o'clock, we'll visit with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., and in the back half of that hour, we'll visit with Lacey Bordelon, VP and COO of JEDCO. That is the Economic Development Corporation out in Jefferson Parish. We'll visit with Detective Brad Rickey as well. From Kenner PD, they've seized a website. And we'll talk about what that is about and the fraud that's going on there. I don't know about you, but I watched the VP debate last evening. And it wasn't long into the debate that I kind of said to myself, rather than having a second Trump-Harris debate, I almost would prefer a Waltz Vance debate again. Because I got to be quite honest with you, folks. Whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, or otherwise, those two guys did a much better job of articulating the policies, the accomplishments, what they hope to accomplish, and why, than the presidential candidates. I don't know about you, but that's how I felt. I was like listening. I love the cordial nature of it. I love that there was a sense of mutual respect. I love that, you know, they weren't stepping all over each other. And when they did, they apologized and stepped back and stopped and let the other person finish. Those things happen during the course of a good, you know, debate. And that's what it seemed like to me. It was just a good debate. And I don't think either one of them really hurt themselves, obviously. I'm not sure how much of an impact it's going to have on the election. But if anything, for me, it was emblematic of how we should conduct ourselves in the interaction, in the articulation of differing opinions and ideologies, to make the strong points, to point out the other's weak points, and to fact check one another. It's the obligation of those that are involved in a debate, certainly not the moderators. Unfortunately, not unlike the last debate, the debate moderators, Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell, they had to engage in gratuitous editorial. It's no big surprise. I mean, if you just look at their track record over the past several years of where they are, they're very much partisan. And that's a shame, quite frankly. You know, it's okay to hold the incumbent administration accountable for what they're doing, whether or not you are a Democrat or a Republican or otherwise. In fact, they should get the most of the critique, the look-see, the investigation, because they are the ones in power. A lot of people have lost sight of that, right? They're like, Newell, Why are you pointing out everything about Kamala Harris? Well, because she is in a position of authority. She's complaining and pointing out things that need to be done. Well, damn, well, do it. I mean, it's that simple. And I think it's legitimate. It doesn't mean you're trying to help the other candidate. It means you're pointing out the frailties of the administration that sits in front of you and presents itself to you as voters, constituents, taxpayers, each and every day. That gratuitous editorial, in many respects, was really misleading. And it didn't tell the whole story, and I think at some point in time, J.D. Vance had had enough of it. The other thing that was interesting for me was there were two points in the debate that I thought were kind of defining moments for the debate. One, and I'll just start with, because this came up earlier in the debate than the other, is Vice President nominee Waltz's inability to just squarely answer the question about his puffing or misdirection, or I don't know if it was a lie or not. I don't know what his intent was about where he was during the Tiananmen Square incident. And obviously, when people started to fact check him, they figured out that he was not in China at that point in time. He was in Hong Kong much later in that summer. And I think, you know, the point that I would make is that these have this series of when he misspeaks about certain things in his life that he identifies as defining moments. In order to make those defining moments more relevant, he engages in puffing. He tries to associate it with other things to make it more relevant to his story. It was interesting, you know, because he went through this long dialogue about talking about China and going there as a teacher and being involved in this program that was actually partially sponsored by the Communist Party. One of those trips was a trip to participate in this program, but it was also his honeymoon. And he planned his wedding on the fifth anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown. And when his wife was asked about it, her response was, he wanted to have a date he'll always remember. Curious, right? How many U.S. citizens, Americans, have a desire to memorialize something in your life that's important to you on the same date as Tiananmen Square? I don't know. He's the one that coined weird. I just find that a little strange. Now to the second, Vance. I am completely confused, mystified, disappointed, and everything else with the Republicans' inability to say that Trump lost the election. It's apparent. It's relevant. With all of the litigation that had gone on, did they find some impropriety? Yes. Did it rise to the level of going to make a difference in the election? No. If we had the evidence, you bring the evidence. They did not bring the evidence. Whose fault is that? It's not the Democrats' fault. It's the fault of the individuals making the accusations. You can accuse all you want, but if you can't bring it, then give it up. It's one of the reasons why I said in the aftermath of January 6th, rear view mirror for Donald Trump. Because I knew then, and I know now, that this issue was not going to go away for him. And it was a disappointing moment. It came towards the end of the debate where I thought Vance had a little bit of the upper hand and was kind of able to push back on some of the things that Waltz had said after a slow start by him. And then I think he found his footing on a couple of issues that he felt more comfortable with. That's not uncommon. You see that in debates all the time. If I'm going to be fair about this, you know, and I have to say to J.D. Vance, you know, they were trying to make a big deal out of the facts that Tim Waltz was nervous. He says, well, I certainly would hope that he would be nervous. He goes, I was nervous. They even asked J.D. Vance, he said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous were you? He said, 11. He goes, it's the biggest moment of my political life. I'm in front of millions upon millions upon millions of people. Of course I'm going to be nervous. He goes, I didn't catch the nervousness of Waltz. He should be nervous. It's a big moment for both of us. Not a big deal. Let's move on. Very honest response. And I love the way that he handled it. I did not like the way he handled the question. Just answer it. After all this time, for Christ's sake, answer it. He did not win the election. Shit. How easy was that? Right? How easy is it to say that? It doesn't mean you embrace ballot harvesting. It doesn't mean that in light of the pandemic, that the violation of state rules and procedures were circumvented in order to accomplish things relative to voting. It doesn't mean you embrace any of those things. And those are all things that went down for whatever reason. But when it came time to prove whether or not there was enough impropriety to change the outcome of the election, they didn't bring it. They tried. They gave it the good old college try, but it did not happen. Why do we have such a difficult time admitting it? It was a big disappointment for me. It was a huge upside opportunity for J.D. Vance to just say, no, we didn't. And that's why on January 20th, when it was time to ride off into the sunset and exit the White House, they did. End of the story. But as though we don't want to bring an end to the story. For what reason, I don't know. I'm completely and totally mystified by it. I don't think that is the driving force motivating the base of the Republican Party, because there's so much other red meat out there to talk about relative to the ideology and the policies of the Biden-Harris administration. There's a huge chasm on a whole lot of issues. That can't be the one that's motivating Republicans to go to the polls. It doesn't mean that you don't look at election processes across the country. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be concerns, right? Like Governor Newsom in California the other day signing a bill in advance of this election saying, in California, you no longer have to present a driver's license in order to vote. Why? Why is that a good thing? I don't think it's a good thing at all. I can't get a prescription. I can't pick that up without given my driver's license. I can't get tickets at will call without presenting my driver's license. I can't get on a plane without presenting my driver's license. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And these are all a lot of the things that we have to present a driver's license for, like when you go to Social Security and you want to get benefits and this, that, otherwise, or anything else. You have to have all of these things done, many of which are about providing the necessities of life, right? Prescriptions, present your driver's license. Why not voting? I've yet to have somebody explain that to me. That for all of the other things that go on in life, people have this uncanny ability to get themselves to the DMV and get a driver's license. But when it comes to voting, all of a sudden, that's a huge impediment. People can't do it. There's so many folks out there that can't get a driver's license. But for all of the other necessities of life, benefits and otherwise, and you're called upon to present a driver's license all the time. I don't understand. I cannot connect these dots. Why are we continuing to fight that fight? So the Republicans have some legitimate issues here and questions about why that's a big issue that Democrats simply just can't answer. And it's the same thing when Democrats speak of illegal immigrants in this country don't vote in federal elections. Well, that's not true. They do. We're not sure about the numbers because we don't have strong state systems that are actually auditing that in many cases. Because the manner in which the process works, that in some states, on election day, you can register to vote right there at the precinct. So there are a bunch of different things out there that are a challenge that kind of lend themselves a little bit to fraudulent behavior, people that want to manipulate the system or otherwise. And now I got a text, don't need a license for prescriptions. Well, you're wrong, not all, but certain prescriptions you do. I picked up one yesterday. I presented a license. They asked for it. So you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, so the reality is that why is that? But those were the two moments, right? This inability to say that you actually lost the election and move on. And Waltz admitting he's a knucklehead. He's puffing. He's connecting dots that are not there to make that story more relevant to what it is that he's trying to talk about. Is it worth it? Obviously not, right? Why do you need to do that? Well, I just kind of get talking. And he didn't have a legitimate answer, and he looked goofy when he was trying to explain it away. You know, so, and got another one. I pick up my wife's prescriptions without a driver's license. Let me say it again. It all depends what the prescription is. Okay, folks? I'm not making this up. You want to call the pharmacy? I mean, am I the only one that's ever had to provide a driver's license? I don't think so. But back to the point. Don't need to make it more relevant than what it is. But in the end, the moderators, I'd probably give them, a C+. They couldn't help themselves at all with the gratuitous editorializing on many occasions. And obviously the manner in which some of the questions were phrased were more aggressive as they were asked of J.D. Vance than they were of Tim Waltz. That was blatantly evident. I was looking at the questions last evening. It's like, you know, why go through that exercise? In the aftermath of the breakdown of what went on in the previous debate on ABC, and the fact that even their ratings went down as a result of that, people stopped watching David Muir on TV, so much so it appeared in the ratings. And then they start scrambling. Why would you take that risk? Why not just play it down the middle? And the truth be told is that a lot of the mainstream media, quite frankly, are worried. A lot of folks think they're worried about Donald Trump being elected because of Donald Trump's policies and things of that nature. I don't believe that for a second. I believe they don't want Donald Trump in power to minimize the mainstream media. And he would probably do it. because in many cases they've not been completely and totally fair to him. Now, a lot of what he's gone through, he's brought on himself. I've said that over and over and over again. But that's what they fear. They fear being minimized. They don't want to be minimized. There's no doubt Democrats make the mainstream media more relevant. In fact, they use them quite often. They use them in order to gain successes. And with that, the mainstream media has the ability to get ratings, to get the clicks. That's what it's all about, if they were honest. That is what they fear. Because in the 4 years of the previous Trump administration, guess what? They were minimized. And they know it. So it's going to be interesting to see in a couple of days what the polls reveal as it relates to the public's reaction to last night's debate. But in the end, I enjoyed listening to those two gentlemen debate topics a lot more than the previous debate of the two presidential candidates. And for me, I'd rather see them have another debate. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. Greg, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel. Man, I like you. I didn't get enough substance out of last night. There's a few things I'd like to say if I have a moment or two. Mr. Walls, I mean, obviously the good people of Minnesota trust this guy. He's been reelected, but twice. He was in the House of Representatives. But there's no substance there. Whereas J.D. Vance seems to be an up-and-comer. He really has a war record. I wish he had pressed him more on his lies about being in the service. And I don't mean to say this to any of our reservists, National Guard, Louisiana Air Guard, but as a regular Navy guy and for many years, we used to, you know, I mean, some kids were weekend warriors, you know? I mean, thank God they do what they do. I'm not going to demean that, but as an active duty guy, I don't know. I don't know why he wants to press his record so much on the fact that he was once a, you know, I don't know what he wants to do.
Well, and he was Greg, never... I am going to respectfully disagree with you. I don't think that we need to draw a distinction of reservists or, you know, versus active duty. There is a structure, there is a role for everyone, and sometimes the reservists are called up to do exactly what the active duty folks do. And you know, that's the structure that we have in our military. And they're equally as important, quite frankly. If you just look at Israel today, the vast majority of the folks that are fighting in that country today are reservists that were called up. And they're playing a critical role in the defense of that country, as well would ours if we were called or pulled into a war. So I just disagree. There's a number of different paths that you can take in the military. I never served. I didn't even have to register for the draft. They eliminated on December 31st. I turned 18 on January 11th. There's always a part of me that felt cheated, and if ever I had a regret in my life, it's that I did not serve in the military. I don't know why it bugs me, but it does. It's always bugged me. I've always been a little disappointed in myself about it for whatever reason. You know, but I just have a different view on that. Thank you so much for the call. We have Detective Brad Rickey here from the Kenner PD. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Newell? I'm glad to be here. And on behalf of Chief Conley, thanks for allowing us to get this opportunity to get this information out there and maybe prevent some people from becoming victims. As you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right?
Absolutely. Brad, I'm going to start it in a weird way. Did you ever in your wildest dreams thought that as a law enforcement officer that you would be seizing a website. That's when I read the story. I was like, there's literally no end to what the police are called upon to do these days.
Yeah, no, it's definitely changed in the 21 years that I've been doing this, you know, for, you know, since the beginning of time. If somebody was committing a crime, they had to physically be present in that jurisdiction to do so. And now they can literally be anywhere in the world, and defraud citizens of Kenner or of the parish of money.
So tell us about this fake website and what they were trying to accomplish.
Yeah, so about 2 weeks ago, members of the Kenner Police Department, some detectives, my coworkers, got some text messages basically stating that they drove on a Louisiana toll road and that they had to go to this website, gopass.info, which purported to be a legitimate Louisiana DOT website. They had to go pay this $3.75 fee. And if the fee was not paid, there would be a $30 penalty. Now, I'm looking at this text, and there's a couple of things that popped out at me, the first of which, you couldn't just click on it and go to the website. Second of which, you know how we here in the U.S., you have the dollar sign and then the 30 if you're trying to say $30. In this case, mm-hmm. they had 30 and then the dollar sign after that. You know, obviously, the DOT wouldn't send out something like that. So I started looking into it. And what I realized was the text messages were totally fraudulent.
And do we know how many folks actually paid the fee?
We have no idea at this point. The investigation is still ongoing. You know, the website that the victims were directed to, GoPass Info, it was live. It collected names, addresses, date of births, phone numbers, email addresses, credit card numbers, and cardholder names, and I'm sure it was collecting IP addresses as well. We don't know at this time how many people were defrauded of the money, what the total amount was, but it's still under investigation.
So basically, you just outlined all of the information that you never want in the hands of these kind of individuals.
Absolutely not.
To say the least. I mean, because you never know what they're going to do next with all of that information, right?
Yeah, and you know, this website, this gopass.info website, it looked just like a legitimate DOT website. It actually stole their GoPass logo and graphics using the same fonts, the same, you know, the same colors and everything. So if you didn't know any better, you would think that it was a legitimate DOT website. Now, me having done this for a little while, I start playing around with it, and you can see dead links where, you know, you roll your cursor around to, which is supposed to be a link, and then you click on it, and it goes nowhere. That's a sign.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, probably at this juncture as well, we still don't know who the authors of this or who created this website, right?
No, we don't. We do know that the server is located in Russia. So that's a clue. But, you know, will anybody ever be arrested on this? I don't know. But, you know, we can play whack-a-mole on our end and shut down these websites when they pop up.
No, absolutely. And that's the critical thing to do, and to inform the public like y'all have done, to make sure that if they haven't traveled on a toll road, you know, part of the problem, I guess, here, Brad, and I guess you're going to see this more in law enforcement, is that you're seeing more and more the utilization of these toll roads, right, across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once we started looking into this, we saw that it was not just limited to the gopass.info website. We also located another website, go-pass.net. And then gopass.org, and then in the go, there's no X, it's just G-E-A-U, which are all made to purportedly be legitimate. So this is widespread. And then further investigation even revealed that this server that's based in Russia, there are dozens of websites, fraudulent websites, linked to this server in multiple states. I don't want to name the states or exactly how many websites we're looking at right now, but it's quite extensive.
I would venture to say that you might be, if you and I had an appointment on October 2nd of 2025, y'all might still be involved in this investigation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the ones that, you know, we can link to Louisiana, we're going to investigate and shut down. But Homeland Security has been involved in this. They're very active, and they're going to pick it up in regards to the websites that don't necessarily target citizens of Louisiana.
And is that state DHS or is that federal DHS?
Federal Department of Homeland Security, federal. HSI, and Homeland Security Investigations.
And I saw in the article the National Intellectual Property Rights Center is involved as well. I'm not familiar with that organization. What is it that they do?
Yeah, no, I had never heard of it until about 2 weeks ago myself. They're actually part of Homeland Security. They look at trademark infringements. And this kind of internet-based fraud.
Yeah. And obviously, we'll probably see more of these agencies because this is just really prevalent. People have to be on guard. Just don't willy-nilly give out this information about yourself, right?
Yeah, you really have to check into it and look at things and instead of just, you know, clicking on a link and saying, oh, you know, it's only $3.75. You know, it's not that big of a deal, but you got to look further down the road and see, yeah, this may only be $3.75 now that you're thinking about, but they have your credit card number, they have your IP addresses, they have your date of birth, your phone number, your home address. So there's a lot of stuff that they could do with that information.
So, Ricky, one question, Brad, I mean, was this just sent out randomly to folks, or was this sent out to folks that had actually crossed through or utilized a toll road?
No, I have not spoken with one person who actually drove on a Louisiana toll road. My three coworkers, none of us drove on a Louisiana toll road. Our friends and family who have contacted us since this got put out in the media, who have received it, none of them drove on a Louisiana toll road. I'm not sure where these scam artists got the phone numbers from, but it seems like they just used a shotgun approach and sent them out to almost everybody.
So no connection then to a recent breach or otherwise y'all have been able to determine as of yet?
Not that I know of at this point.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting for sure. Thank you so much for putting it out. And if ever this happens again, please know that we're ready and willing to assist in making sure the message gets out relative to these frauds. $375 doesn't sound like much. Then there's a $30 fine if a payment's not made. And I'm sure people got that as well. And it'd be interesting to see how many people paid the $30. Before it was all said.
On behalf of Chief Conley, thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. That's Detective Brad Rickey with the Kenner PD. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. So I think it's over 60% of the people embrace this mass deportation issue that was bannered about last evening in the VP debate. It was also bannered about in the presidential debate. Just the other day, on the same day that President Joe Biden said that he reduced illegal border crossings by 60% at the southwest border, what he failed to mention was that he's created all these new programs where they can just go to an app or go to a border entry and get into the country and be waved in. He announced a sweeping extension of refugee admissions for foreign nationals and habitual residents of countries in multiple continents. And the authorization was twofold. The first authorization expands the refugee admission process to 125,000 foreign nationals from countries around the world. The second opens a refugee admission process to foreign nationals and those with habitual residence in Cuba, Iraq, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Eurasia, the Baltics, amongst others, with no numerical limitation. Now, he says that this is justified by humanitarian concerns, not yours, others, or is otherwise in the national interest, but doesn't express what about this supports our national interests. The authorization is for fiscal year 2025, which began yesterday. And the following numbers on the first authorization of the $125,000, I'm going to break down this way. From the continent of Africa, about somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000. East Asia, somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000. Europe and Central Asia, somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000. Latin America and Caribbean, somewhere between $35,000 and $50,000. And Near East South Asia, somewhere between $30,000 and $45,000. Now, that allocation, they keep it like that so it can be flexible, but it can't exceed the $125,000. Biden also authorized, and you're going to love this, the State Department to provide taxpayer-funded assistance to the refugees through the Migration and Refugee Assistance Act of 1962. They will be providing taxpayer-funded assistance on behalf of those applying as refugees and for admission to the United States as part of the Overseas Refugee Admissions Program, will contribute to the foreign policy interests of the United States and designate such persons for this purpose. And this authorization will allow foreign nationals to apply for this status from Cuba, Eurasia, the Baltics, Iraq, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. You know, sometimes you wonder whether or not folks are really tone deaf, right? We continue to struggle with knowing who's in the country. We don't have our hands around that. We have failed in the processing of all of this. We talk about a bill that everybody should have passed because it's the most restrictive bill out there and it's overreaching and everything else, but it allows 5,000 a day to come across the border before it triggers any of any real intervention that we can make at the border. So we basically are waving in 1,700,000 people or so to come into the country in every given year. And on top of that, as he's going to ride into the sunset in January, now he has to do these authorizations at the beginning of the fiscal year, right? And he did so yesterday, October 1st, or the day before yesterday, before October 1st, when the budget year starts, we're providing these numbers. And we don't have any of what we're doing in immigration overall. We don't have our hands around it. Remember, for 3 years, they said the border was secure. And then when we got closer to an election, they started getting more aggressive. And some of the policy decisions they've made before, they even got more restrictive because they know they're losing this issue at the ballot box. Got a text here that says, doesn't sound illegal. What's your problem? My problem is we can't vet the people that are coming in now. We don't have the assets or resources to vet these. And if we do assign the assets and resources to vet these, guess what happens on the other side of this ledger? You will get less vetting in the process of those crossing at the southern border. It's not hard for me to connect these dots. We'll be right back. The Economic Innovation Group think tank says that 17.6% of Americans' income is a U.S. government benefit handout. Nearly a fifth of Americans' income, more than double the proportion in the 1970s. We'll be right back with Michael Heck when we return.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.